This is Bobby Curno, and you've been listening to the Shell Shock Podcast, episode number 9. Hey everyone, you're listening to the Shell Shocked Podcast, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles podcast. My name's Josh. With me today, I have Andrew, Karen, Jeff, Isaac, and Colton, and we have a very special guest, Bobby Curno. Hey. Hi, how's it going, Bobby?
Good, thanks for having me.
Awesome, yeah, thanks for being here. So anyway, we got a few questions to fire at you tonight, but first, how you doing? How are things going?
I'm doing good. I'm here in California, and we're getting a huge rain, which is needed. So it's been nice and cozy all day today. So it's been good.
I'm up in Orange County. We're not getting any of that. We're just getting wind.
Oh, okay. That's too bad.
So, oh well. Well, anyway, I think we'll start off with Andrew. He's got a couple of questions for you.
Yep. Hey, Bobby. Hey. Great to have you on here. Now, it's no secret that I may not always agree with the direction, tone, and some of the additions from the other Turtle universes, be that as it may. But I do believe it is the best Turtle comic that it's allowed to be under the watch of Nickelodeon. Now, obviously, we know the Turtles aren't allowed to kill or drink beers or swear, and blood is kind of kept to a minimum. But what are the other kinds of challenges you guys all encounter the approvals process of each issue and storyline? I mean, are there, like, whole storylines that get vetoed in the mix? Or are they pretty much hands-off beyond, you know, the cardinal sins like killing and so on?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and Nickelodeon's really hands-on. They see everything. They comment on everything. They see proposals, they see scripts, they see revisions of scripts, they see concept drawings, they see pencils, they see final colors, and it really varies from creator to creator what their comments are. You know, some creators they really like, and some they've got some issues with, and, you know, depending on my feeling on them, sometimes I'll sort of have to really fight for something, and other times it's easy. They're definitely much more labor intensive than other licensors that I work with at IDW. And that's a blessing and a curse. I think the book is ultimately better because of their involvement, but it's a lot more work. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh man, I don't have time to fight this battle, but it ultimately always makes the book better. And you know, the people over there are strong storytellers. We, as you said, how you don't always agree with what we're doing. I don't always agree with them, but you know, everyone's really passionate about the Turtles, and there's a lot of respect, and so it's hard to go wrong with that. And you know, I consider them friends over there now, so it's all good.
Kind of a pick your battle sort of a thing.
Yeah, now, totally. Yeah, there'll totally be a time where an artist would be like, can you talk about this? I'm like, I would love to, but let's wait for a week because right now I'm trying to get this other thing done or whatever. Yeah.
Is it like a team of like a, I'm trying to imagine it's like a boardroom full of Nickelodeon executives? Is it like one guy, two guys?
It's pretty much just two people for our main book. But the animated book, our spinoff New Animated Adventures, a lot more people see that. It's got to be vetted by a lot of people, and some other people on standards and practices, and then some people on the show. So, you know, it's funny. People don't talk about that book a whole lot, but it's the most difficult and labor intensive in some ways. So it's kind of odd.
All right. I got to ask, there's been a lot of whispers about certain individuals from Mirage and maybe even some other company coming back into the fold for the big IDW 30th anniversary special. Is there anything or anybody you can announce about it at this time, or even anything you can tell us about it that we can look forward to?
You're talking about the 30th anniversary book?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think it's out there that it's basically split up into five basic sections, kind of matching the different eras of TMNT comics. So we'll have an early Mirage section. We'll have an Adventures section with Steve and Chris Allen, Steve Murphy and Chris Allen, and Then we're going to have an image section with Frank Fosco and Gary Carlson. Jim Lawson's doing writing and drawing with Steve Levine on colors, a kind of later Mirage story. And we're going to wrap it up with an IDW story, kind of set in the early days of our, or the first 6 months of our run. And then we'll have a bunch of pinups, which I try to reach out to as many people as I could who have made a big contribution to Ninja Turtles, with varying degrees of success. I kind of wish I was able to get more of the early Mirage guys in there, in that section. But there's some good ones, in there, which, you know, I can try and think of all their names, but there's about 10 or 14 different folks all together, and I have to think about it for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's the only two burning ones from me at this point. Back to you, Josh.
Yeah, so those are really awesome.
Can I just jump in for one little comment I wanted to ask?
No,
not at all. This isn't free. Go.
you mentioned like with the book split up like amongst the different groups, there would be like stuff like early Mirage and stuff. It's like, how close to the original material can they get since you have been able to reprint that old?
Oh material? Yeah, that yeah. This is the first time it'll be like going through Nickelodeon. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, well, I to be completely honest, I think folks are going to be are going to be a little disappointed in the early Mirage section. That's kind of going to be mostly just because Kevin is, Peter was great to work on the cover that we did for it, but he's, you know, he wasn't too interested in doing much else to my understanding. And, you know, maybe he's busy with the new Mirage stuff that he's been talking about recently.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like you guys, you in particular may even be directly responsible for like rekindling his interest in.
Well, I think that's probably too generous. I would be surprised if that was the case, but maybe, sure. Let's say so, sure. And Kevin has been really busy with the annual. He's kind of behind on the annual, so what we're going to kind of do in that section is kind of see some stuff that you guys, people, you know, hardcore fans have probably seen, like the first turtle drawing, the first couple turtles drawings. It's going to be kind of a retrospective. We'll have a small four-pager in there, but it's nothing. That's the one section that doesn't really have anything super brand new. A couple unseen art artifacts, but that section I wish we could have done more with, but that's just sort of a symptom of the time. But the other sections I am super, super excited about, and, you know, it's been, you know, these guys are my heroes. Jim Lawson's my hero. You know, Steve and Chris, I loved Adventures back in the day. So it's been a hoot to work with them and see those pages coming in. It's been a whole different side of what I normally do. So that's been cool.
That's gonna be pretty awesome to read.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Andrew, if that's all you've got, maybe move on to Karen next.
Hi, it's great to talk to you. Oh, crap, and I'm dropping everything on my desk. Please pardon me. So I hate to take this in a tangent kind of away from the exciting news of the anniversary book, because that's more information than I've gotten on it, so now I'm really extra excited about that book. I'm just kind of a little more curious about you and, you know, how you got to be chief editor on a book. Like, what did you start? Is this where you had intended to go? How did you get your job?
Not at all. You know, I started in film school and was in the film world for a while, and that was cool. I kind of got fed up with how, if you want to actually produce anything, it either takes a whole lot of time, a whole lot of money, or a whole lot of compromise. So it's like, man, I want to just tell my stories how I want to. And so, you know, I got interested in comics because I've always been a comic book nerd, and I came to IDW because I had some contacts there. And when Turtles first started, I was just an assistant editor. And if you look at the first four issues, Scott Dunbier was the main editor on it. And Scott's a legend. He edited League of Extraordinary Gentlemen back in the day. He created the Artist Editions series here at IDW. He's just really awesome. But, you know, Turtles, he was friends with Kevin, but Turtles just wasn't what he knew. And it wasn't really where his passion was. And me, I'm 32, so I was right there at the first turtle craze, and yeah, I grew up with it. And you know, when I got to college, I sort of fell out with it. But you know, they take up a large part of my creative psyche. So, you know, I just kind of stepped in, and by the fourth issue, it was kind of clear that, you know, Scott was like, you know what you're doing here, and you've proven that you can do what it takes to make this book work. So why don't you work on it? And Scott had tons of other stuff on it. So it, you know, I was at the right place at the right time, and I had a passion for it. So, you know, it worked out pretty nicely in that respect.
Oh, that's amazing. You mentioned falling out of it when you went to college and then getting back into Turtles. That's pretty much my story as well. So, solidarity. So, my last question for you involves actually working a bit at IDW. So, what is the company culture like? Walk us through the typical day of, you know, being an editor on a comic book, especially this one.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, we come into work, and the first thing we have do in the morning at 9:15, it's a small company. It's about, 30, 35 people all together, and about eight, nine people in editorial. So editorial gets together with the heads of the company in the morning, and we look at our production schedule. We talk about what's in production this week that we're trying to get out the door that week. And then we talk about what's going on next week and give us status updates on the books. You know, we publish anywhere between 12 and 15 books a week. It's a heavy workload. You know, compare it to someone like Dark Horse, who, you know, has an equal market share, and they've got about 90 people in their company. So we're all pretty harried and busy, but it's also really rewarding. It means we're very hands-on, and we get a lot of autonomy and get to make lots of decisions without having to run it up the ladder a lot. So we kind of have a morning meeting, and then depending on the day, maybe we'll have another meeting. There'll be a brainstorming meeting or kind of long-term planning meeting. But then the rest of the day is pretty much just us at our computers, kind of going back to film school. Being an editor is a lot like being a producer on a film. You're pretty much organizing it, making sure it's on schedule, making sure it's on budget, making sure no one's flipping out, making sure the ship is running smoothly. So most of that's just writing emails and being in contact with people and making sure everyone is kind of where they should be. So that's kind of the job of an editor in general. There's a lot more to it. You know, you write solicitation copy, you proofread books, you balloon the dialogue to kind of show the letterer where the balloons should go and make sure they know who all the characters are.
Cool.
In terms of artists, you know, I'm not an artist. I think I've got good tastes in picking artists, but I don't know how they do what they do. So I try and keep pretty hands off there. Writers, I feel like I've got some advice to give there. So if it's needed, I give advice there. And specifically with Turtles, Tom Waltz is the main writer on that book, and he's also an editor at IDW. And he sits 3 feet away from me. So we're constantly just yammering back and forth about ideas. You know, today we pretty much figured out what we're going to do, if we're so lucky to do so, what we're going to do in like 75 to 100. So that's kind of, you know, we had a basic idea of the general scope of 50 through 100, but with a lot of huge gaps, but we kind of figure out a thematic through line for those issues. So that's the most fun part of the job, is just being, is one, to see the art coming in from all the amazing, super talented artists, and two is just shooting the shit with Tom and having fun and, you know, busting each other's chops and that kind of thing. So that's probably more than you were looking for, but that's sort of the day to day.
No, that's perfect. And I would love to have been a fly on the wall to hear what we've got in store for us, for some of the later issue books. Thank you very much. Those are my, my questions. I'm going to pass it back to Josh.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Jeff, what do you got to say?
Hi, Bobby. This kind of goes along with Andrew was asking earlier. You guys have taken a lot of creative licenses with the characters that we all know and love, especially the Turtles themselves. You know, with their origins, they're now resurrected. You have them as Hamadayoshi's human children in a past life, and were you guys at all worried about how the audience was going to respond to these changes?
Yeah. You know, you're going back a couple years now, and I'm kind of embarrassed how poorly I remember the start of the run. But sure, I mean, it was definitely, we knew that was going to be the big change. But it wasn't a big concern. Mostly just because it felt right. We felt like it. And I'll preface this with saying that the book's not closed on the whole reincarnation angle. There's going to be new facets to that explored, and there's still new wrinkles to be explored there. But in short, you know, it seemed to add a whole layer to the mythology that we could draw upon. It made the rivalry between between Shredder and Yoshi and Splinter, you know, much more immediate, much more visceral. And it just, you know, it was something that we could, an origin story that we can kind of come back to, if we needed to, and draw new elements from. And, you know, I think Secret History of the Foot Clan, which, you know, that book originated out of me just being like, that'd be a cool title for a book. And hey, Mateus, you did those great pages on issue 5. Do you think you might want to do something there? And you did. But so when we did the reincarnation angle, none of it was, we didn't really know what we were going to do with it, but we just knew that it allowed us to have possibility to explore a new element of Turtles that maybe hadn't been explored a whole lot. So it got us excited, and it felt right, and didn't present that many problems, and to us narratively in the story we wanted to tell. And so when those kind of things are checked off, that's kind of something you have to go with, regardless of whether, you know, of how outside people might respond to it. And we wanted to do something. Basically, we wanted to do something a little bit different and a little bit new, without it just being a gimmick. We wanted it to have a core. We wanted it to come from storytelling potential, and it seemed like it did. And it continues to inform things we do today. So, you know, I think it made a lot of sense in a lot of ways. So we didn't worry about it too much.
Okay. Well, thanks. Anyway, there's also something else I wanted to ask regarding the IDW universe in a whole, because you guys seem to be having it that the Turtles share universe with the Ghostbusters and the X-File guys and all these other characters. And there's also been a theory. This came out around the time of the Michelangelo one shot, because the emerald that those crooks were going after was a green emerald. So people were speculating, oh, is that kryptonite? Are we going to see Superman? Is there any way that would happen?
that'd be super cool. You know, that all depends on any kind of crossover requires a lot of sort of legal discussion and negotiation with other companies, especially when, you know, things like X-Files and Ghostbusters. And I'll do a brief tangent, is that it's not a shared universe with Turtles. If you finish Conspiracy, you actually find out that, spoilers, that the entire thing is kind of wiped out of existence. So that particular story isn't strictly in continuity. Anyway, but it's a lot easier to do when all these things are sort of being done in-house. Now, we still have to, it's still really complicated, because Conspiracy, you have to talk to Fox, who owns X-Files, or if you do something with Ghostbusters, you have to do something with, I don't work on that book, so I forget who the licensor is right now, but I think it's Paramount or Universal. That doesn't sound right, actually. Anyway, but you still have to negotiate a lot of things. Then you've got two sets of approvals instead of one, so it's really difficult. And then if you two were to, extrapolate that to a complete outside company like DC with Superman, it becomes more difficult. That being said, we've got really good working relationships with DC and Marvel, because we do artist editions, and you know, I don't think they look at us directly as a competitor, since we're kind of the next step down in terms of market share. So it's possible one day to see Turtles meet someone from Marvel or someone from DC or someone from Dark Horse. There's no immediate plans, but it is something we have been in discussions with one of those companies about something in 2015. So it's possible.
Come on, Turtles versus Predator.
that would be awesome. That's right. Yeah, you've got something like that, right, Andrew?
Yeah. We'll see.
watch the Hal and Kyle show on YouTube sometime.
I'll stop it.
All right. Well, thanks, Bobby. Back to you, Josh.
Yeah, that's 2015. Now, why am I always looking ahead? Okay, geez, I need to enjoy what's going on now.
We're doing solicits for August right now and planning fall books. And so, yeah, 2015 is like right around the corner. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I know, right? To you, Isaac.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bobby, it's nice to talk to you again. You probably don't remember me. I shot an interview with you ages ago, for a Ninja Turtle documentary thing.
Cool.
At the time, we were super intrigued because it was, I think it was around 2012, with kind of the future of the IDW book, because it was it's still relatively fresh. I guess you guys were in the early days of some of the big story, you know, changes and bombs and stuff and amazing stuff that you guys have been doing. I'm super curious to kind of hear from your side of the table, how you think, you know, the Turtle kind of fandom, new fandom, like, you know, the world is receiving Turtles again, you know, nowadays, especially as it pertains to your book and how your book plays into that. Like, where do you see, like, the future of Turtle fandom right now, or Turtle popularity, I should say, I guess?
You guys are asking good questions that I don't have immediate answers for. I think it's really healthy right now, which is great. You know, the comics sort of led the new, I'm not saying we're the cause of it in any way, but we were the first kind of ones to step out the door, out of, you know, since Viacom bought the property. We all thought it was going to be successful just because it seems like, you know, Turtles is great. There's a lot of love for Turtles. There's a lot of storytelling potential. So we thought it was going to do well. We had high expectations for it. We were surprised with how well it did. But occasionally you have books that, you know, launch really well and then they peter out pretty quickly. And it's, you know, it's stuck around. It's, you know, our second or third strongest property at IDW. And, you know, I think maybe in terms of licensed comic books, Buffy does better on any given month. But you know, it's right there in the top three of licensed books, three years later. So that's been great. So it's been great speaking personally, for Turtles comic books. And then, you know, the cartoon, I think I love the cartoon. I think it's something everyone can enjoy. It seems like kids really like it. It seems like a lot of, you know, old fans really enjoy it, and it seems like they're doing a lot of things really right, and I look forward to watching it. The movie, we'll see what the movie turns out to be. You know, I think there's some skepticism about it, and, you know, I share some of that skepticism, but I also know what it's like to do something and have people talk about it before it's out there. So, you know, it's like, let's see how it goes, and I think there's potential there too, if they do everything right. But the point is that it's really healthy right now, and it's all the hardcore fans are still around and excited, and then there's a lot of lapsed fans that are definitely coming back, and it seems like there's new fans being created too, and that's just really exciting. You know, I think if you look at the Ninja Notes in the comics, I kind of want to write something and be like, guys, I don't want to hear your backstory. It's always the same. It's always like, I've been a fan forever. And part of me is like, that's just like gets old to read as a reader of the comic book. But as someone who's working on the book, it's always really satisfying to hear that people that, you know, who Turtles matter to a lot, whether growing up or just as part of their creative psyche, that they're still really interested in. I think it's a huge testament to what Peter and Kevin did that these characters can survive this amount of time. I don't see any reason why Turtles shouldn't be around in 50 years like Batman or Superman or Spider-Man. I mean, there's the story potential is there. The core identity of the characters are strong enough to survive small changes like the cartoon has done, like we have done. So I mean, it's really good. I don't know if that it totally answers your question, but it's really encouraging, and I feel just as excited now, if not more, than I did as I did 3 years ago. So you can't ask for much more than that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. No, it totally does. I mean, it is. I think there's a good buzz, and it's still carrying on. You can answer this however you can, but what do you that you can say? What would you say you're the most excited for coming up in the future of the Turtles?
I'm really excited for. There's a lot I'm really excited for. Mm-hmm. What we're working on heavily right now is sort of the road to 50, which we've had sort of mapped out for a long time to issue number 50. It's a lot of, I think it's a really nice combination of big epic stuff, but also some really nice character moments. I feel like our first year we had to we were finding our footing, and then the second year we were sort of building the universe a bit more, and now I feel like we've gotten all that building out of the way, so we can really delve into, we can build on what we've done before, and we can delve into characters more, and there's a couple exciting characters coming up. Whenever I try and do an interview, I'll get to that in a second, but I'm excited to what's coming up in the Road to 50 and what's going to happen with all of the core players, everything it's all been building up to that. And I feel really excited about it. So that's kind of a vague general answer that I'll give. I'll give you guys a little scoop, 'cause I try and do that with every interview. Issue number 36, which I think will be solicited in a couple weeks. So this is a couple weeks scoop. We're going to introduce Rat King. So I'm really excited about that. That's news. I think we've got a really cool, creepy, fun take on him. And the issue with him is going to be really difficult, to write, I think. And we just finished 35 today, actually. But I think we know what we're going to do. And I think it's going to be fun. And I think it's going to be a big treat. He's always been a personal favorite character of my own, so I'm excited to get to him.
Nice. Thanks so much for that tidbit, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you were talking about before, like in the last couple of questions, you had said something about, judging stuff before it's come out and have you been there and stuff like that. And now seems like a good time to ask, have you seen, what do you think of the trailer that just popped up for the Turtles movie that's supposed to come out in August?
I think it's got potential. I don't have much to say other than what I've already said. Just in terms of, it's hard to say at this time. I've definitely got reservations. I'm personally not a big Michael Bay fan. I'm not a fan of the Transformers movies. So I think, like anyone who is not a fan of him, I've got similar reservations. That being said, and when I first saw the turtle designs, I was like, interesting, not sure how it's going to play. And I kind of stand by that. It's easy to see something in a trailer and be like, that's not my cup of tea. But then you see some things in a movie. And I remember Hellboy. When I saw the trailer for that, I was like, that has potential, but I don't know. It kind of looks fake. And then I saw Hellboy and I was like, oh, actually it works really well. It looks pretty awesome. So I really have to reserve judgment until I see the entire thing. I actually read an early draft of the script, and obviously I can't talk about it at all. It seemed like the core elements are there. If it's done correctly. If it's not done correctly, I can see there being some problems. And this is just me talking. I'm just another fan like anyone else. My word is certainly not better than anyone else, but it's got potential. It's definitely got potential, and that's why I'm curious about it. Because again, coming from a film world, I know how how far something can come in editing, how far something can come during shooting. It's really hard to say at this time, but hopefully it's awesome. I'd love for it to be awesome. I love the original movie. I thought that did such a great job of being all ages and being fun for kids, but still retaining a really strong link to the source material. And, you know, I would love to see something like that done again with some of its own unique twists and turns.
Yes. Hear ye. Yes.
That's definitely I expected mostly a quick first impression, but yeah, that's definitely, where I'm kind of sitting as well. Everybody that I know is just looking at me all like, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And pretty much the same way.
I would say the sum of all fears, but that's just me.
Yeah,
and the moment anyone knows you're a Turtle fan and something like that comes up, it's just suddenly my inbox was flooded with, did you see this? And I'm like, yes, I have seen it.
I actually got it before you did. I actually got the people at work being all like, I was going to post it on your Facebook wall, but I knew you probably already saw it. Let's move on. Colton, you've got some questions, and we don't want to run out of time before you got time to ask them. So
I've got a good half hour, guys. So we've got some time, so don't feel rushed.
We were putting it down to two questions each because we were like, oh, this might take a while. Sometimes questions go on to questions go on to questions, but it seems this worked out.
Cool. Yeah, and I feel self conscious. I feel like I'm talking too much, but.
No.
Oh, we've had interviews with people that we've had ones going pretty long, more than an hour.
Cool.
Talk away.
Oh, we've touched on this a little, but strictly speaking for TMNT, what does your job as editor entail? Do you ever find yourself coming up with ideas for the book that you feel compelled to suggest to the writer at the time?
I actually have story credit on the Turtles book since 22, and that was just pretty much, and that's just a symptom of Tom, the writer, sits right next to me, and we just constantly talk ideas, and a couple big plot points, came for me with Cityfall and other things, and Tom was like, you should have story credit on this, and so I was like, okay, I won't object to that. That seems fair. Turtles is a lot different than other books I edit. Being an editor, being a writer myself, and being a freelancer, I know how annoying it can be to get notes and to have other people, sort of step on your work. And I'm really sensitive to that, I think. But with Turtles, since it's Tom and I sitting right next to each other, and we're kind of responsible for the main book, And in order to have some sort of continuity, I do need to give some input. So right now we've announced the Turtles in Time miniseries and Paul Aller and Eric Burnham have worked with me before, and it's an easy rapport at this point, where I feel like I can easily be like, hey, this would be a cool idea if we do this in this issue. And they'll say, okay, yeah. Or they'll say, no, that doesn't feel right. And we just kind of talk it out. And ultimately the buck stops with Tom and I. But I think since I've been on the other side of the equation, I know when someone is being overbearing. And so I'm sure there are writers out there who might think I've been overbearing. But I think overall, I'm very sensitive to that. And, the job of an editor is to help the creator tell the story they want to tell and not tell the story that you want to tell. Because if there's a story you want to tell, then you should write it, because writing's really effing hard. And, it's easier. It's really easy to get ideas and be like, oh, I'm a writer. I've got this great idea for the thing. But it's a lot different than writing every day. I always kind of say to up-and-coming writers that you want to be a writer, write at least 1 hour a day every day for a year, or at least have a total of 365 hours at the end of the year. And if you can't do that, then you're not a writer. That's what being a writer means. And I think a lot of writers would say you have to do a whole lot more than that. I've got a lot of respect. I've got so much respect for artists because I don't know how they do what they do, because I can't draw for shit. But I also have a lot of respect in a different way for writers, because I've been there and I know how difficult it is to look at that blank page. So I think the reason why, I think I've got faults as an editor, but if I have a strength as the editor, it's I have a lot of respect for the creative process and the people that I work with. And I think when you show creators respect, they appreciate it and they bring their A game. And that's been what's so satisfying about Turtles is that I think everyone's enjoyed what they're doing for the most part. And so they want to come back and you know, you look at Mateus, you look at Ross Campbell, you look like all the artists we've had, and they're just doing the best. They all do great work on other books too, but they're just doing their A game. They're not phoning it in, and they're not, you know, they're just being relentless and on tough deadlines, and that's so hard. So I don't even know what the question was anymore, but it's the creators are awesome, and there's not much money in comic books, and it's a hard gig, and you just, the only reason to do it is because you love it.
You know, you could almost add a new credit to the whole list of like writer to all the way down. You could add above that conceptualist, just the idea guy.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Because it's easy to, for some people, it's easier to come up with ideas, and some people, it's easier to just take an idea and go with it.
Yeah. That's definitely true. And that's what's great. You know, that's why every creative relationship's different. Some people do it all their own. Some people, you know, really can elevate other people's stuff better. So it's, and that's what's fun about being an editor is trying to find those pairings that work between artists and writers, or writers and writers, or artists and colorists. That's always fun. It's a bit of trial and error. You don't always succeed, but when it works, it's really satisfying.
Have you ever had to really knuckle down on a guy and be like, look, you don't feel it? Just fucking do it. Has there ever been like a situation like that?
Oh, sure. Not that much with Turtles, because generally people working on Turtles really enjoy Turtles and want to do good work. So I'm really lucky in that way. But I'm not going to name names, but as an editor, sure, there's it happens all the time. Artists, again, I love artists, but artists are really bad at estimating how long it takes them to do what they do every day. Artists love to say that they can do in a week what it takes them 2 to 3 weeks to do. And that's one of the biggest challenges as an editor is to figure out what they're saying is reality. I mean, they're not purposefully lying. You know, occasionally a very rare bad guy is lying, but they're almost never lying. They truly believe they can get things done when they say they can, but it's rare the artist who can actually do that. And that's why you see on the Turtles books, or any, a lot of books, you see fill in artists or fill in pages. That's just the reality of the business. And, you know, God bless Dan Duncan he got 12 issues, well, 11 and a half issues done in 12 months. And you know, that's why he's doing the 30th anniversary book. It's why he did the Shredder Micro. It's just, I love that guy, and he went on to New Pastures, but he's a hero of mine because it's really rare in this day and age to see that actually happen.
We don't have a lot of Kirbys anymore.
Yeah.
That man could get stuff done fast.
How? I don't understand how some of those guys did it. It makes no sense that they're creating worlds, creating designs for new worlds, which takes time in itself, and getting like 2 or 3 issues out a month. It makes no sense to me. But
Lots of cocaine.
I mean, the fourth world alone. He was writing, penciling, and editing one monthly book and 3 bi-monthly books at the same time.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. I feel overworked. Just, you know, maybe writing, trying to do some writing on the side and juggling 7 or 8 books editing a month, and that's not nearly as time intensive as any other part of the creative process. So yeah, I don't understand how it gets done.
They were a special breed back then.
Yeah, they are made of sterner stuff. Less Xbox, less internet. That might help.
Yes. You've worked on the title for quite a long time, basically since the beginning. What is your favorite part of working on the book, and do you have a favorite story?
The best part of my job is just seeing new pages in. I saw just today Mateus turned in the last page of issue 34. And it's awesome. It's a full page splash, featuring some awesome characters, and you know, it's just that's just a treat because you see it in your head, and then to see it resemble what you had in your head, but then better. That's just like Christmas every day. So there's a lot of, being an editor is super stressful and difficult in a lot of ways, but it's offset by having that little piece of Christmas every day, seeing awesome art. In terms of favorite story arc, I don't feel like we really hit our stride until Cityfall. So I feel like we really fired on all cylinders with Cityfall. And I think as an editor, I'm most proud of that book and the Villain Micro series, because that was just a lot to juggle. And all those issues more or less played an important part in telling that larger story. And there was a lot to coordinate, and it was very frantic. But looking back on it, I'm satisfied, and I think it turned out pretty well. There's, of course, things that I think could have been done better, and things I'm not totally happy with. But overall, I think I'm really happy with how that turned out. And then Northampton, you know, after we were like, okay, Cityfall's done. That was a big story arc. So maybe I think there was a really strong possibility that we just kind of sit on our ass and mess up those Northampton issues. But I think they turned out pretty well. And that's just because Ross Campbell's a beast and just turned in page after page of gorgeous, gorgeous pages. So, the entire past year of Turtles, I'm really proud of, just because I think we covered a lot of different ground. We covered really heavy action stuff. We covered some more introspective stuff, and we had some funny moments. We had some super serious moments. And I can kind of feel like, even if we totally mess up going forward, I can say, all right, we got 1 year of really solid Turtles comics that I can feel proud of. Because I feel like we're able to pull it off, each individual reader's mileage may vary, but I'm proud of it. And I feel encouraged that we can do it again, moving forward, especially because I'm just jazzed about some of the ideas we've got coming forward. So again, kind of general vague answer, but I'm proud of this entire past year. I'm proud of what came before that too, but I feel like we kind of found our footing in the past year, and that's been fun.
If you had the go-ahead to add anything from the Mirage Archie books that you aren't currently in the IDW books, be it stories, characters, or more risque/mature material, what would you add and why? You know, no holds bar, whatever you want.
What I love in Mirage so much is, I mean, we kind of hit a little bit on it with Northampton, in that we were able to have, like, you know, issue 30 where no action took place. And so we were able to hit on it a little bit, but I feel like it's difficult. In Mirage, they'd be hanging out sometimes, and you got to know the characters so well because of that. I feel like now that we're established, we can do a little bit more of that. We don't have to worry about losing readers as much as we did the first couple years. But I think just kind of Entertainment Today, it's hard to do that. It's kind of hard to just sit back and relax with the characters. It's something I want us to work towards more in the future, but they made it seem so effortless in Mirage, they really felt like living characters that were just, not every moment was balls to the walls, kill or be killed. They had that, of course, but you know, they had moments to kind of chill out and just relax. Well, I think
they also had 40 and 50 page issues to work with.
That's, you know? And that would help too. Yeah. So I think, you know, I always go back to the Leonardo micro and how, you know, that's just nonstop action, the entire issue. But, you know, I guess a quarter of every page is just them, you know, trimming that Christmas tree and hanging out the rest of the turtles. And, you know, it's that duality. The fact, if it was just all action, it'd be great, but there's sort of a hidden tragedy and makes the world more full that we see what the other turtles are doing. And they're just having fun while Leonardo's going through this gauntlet of hell. You look at other, and just, you know, I feel like teenagers, they drink beer and they smoke pot, and, you know, you saw them drink beer in Mirage, and I would love to be able to do something like that just to show that, you know, these are, especially being a mutant, you know, you'd think you'd rebel a little bit and do things you're not supposed to do. And I kind of wish we could do things every once in a while like that. But ultimately, that stuff that is extras, that's a cherry on the sundae, and I'd love to do it. But ultimately, it's not essential. So, you know, you work with what you got, and what we got is pretty damn good. So in terms of what we're allowed to do.
with those slow moments, I really feel like they make the more balls-to-wall action moments just all the stronger, because you have that moment to breathe and take in what, like, normal life is. So when the action does come, it feels a lot more special.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's, yeah. I feel like that's something that is so important to any story is the build and release. And, you know, television, we're in a golden age of television. That's a cliche, and television's doing it really good. But I feel like movies forget that a lot, that you can build to something. You can have 10 minutes, you know, the audience has already bought their ticket. They're in the theater. You can spend 10 minutes and, you know, have some down moments. So, you know, why not go for that?
It's like the past years of Green Lantern. It's just a never ending climax that doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get us started on that. Hey, Bobby, we've seen some, you know, urban gritty type affair. We've seen some outer space adventures a bit, and it seems like there's even some time travel coming up with the Turtles in Time and all that. How about the fantasy side of, like, the Turtle comics of yore? Will there be like an IDW equivalent to, say, Twilight of the Ring or The River or The Halls of Lost Legends, something like that?
Yeah, you know, Kevin's annual, the new one coming up, that's really, I mean, there's a sci-fi component to it, but that's heavy fantasy. There's a lot of monsters, there's a lot of sword fighting, so there's a lot of that. In terms of the ongoing title, there's going to be some down, in terms of the short answer is no, not really immediately, just because we're kind of building to this, wrapping up this New York story and the Technodrome story. We're kind of building this stuff there. And that's either, as you said, firmly in gritty New York streets or kind of in the sci-fi world. I'm glad we're hitting it a bit with the annual, and there's going to be a couple little spots of that here and there. But it's something that I think we'll see more in, year four or year five, post 50. I love playing role playing games, and I grew up with video games like Might and Magic and that kind of stuff, and read fantasy books. So that's near and dear to my heart. So I'd love to do more of it.
Well, that's amazing. The fact that, you know, we might get some stuff that you normally wouldn't be able to get away with after issue 50. That's pretty awesome, and I'm looking forward to it. I've got a couple of questions, actually. Thanks for coming on, and you've been great so far. One of mine has to do with, like, design changes, which I want to say on record with somebody from IDW, as I say this all the time to other people. I love minimalist Shredder, as opposed to, like, mega armor Shredder. He looks more [S2] Yes. [S1] Like a ninja. And that's absolutely wonderful, but that's not really my thing. The thing that I wanted to say was, in terms of, like, the Turtles designs, I've noticed, and I'm sure everyone else has also, that throughout the run, the designs have, like, subtly changed as they've gone. And even recently, at the end of the Northampton stuff, you're starting to see, like, stuff like around, like, the hands of the Turtles that weren't there before and things. Is that something that just kind of comes as, like, the artist decides to do it, and you and Nickelodeon just okay it, or is that, like, something where you go, you know what, we need to kind of add something new here. Let's put a yellow oval around that bat symbol.
Yeah, that's totally the artist's. You know, if it was up to me, like, if it was just what was in my mind on the page, there'd probably be a bit more consistency. But that's another one of those things where I want the artists to be excited about what they're doing, and I want them to feel like they're contributing and making an important, you know, contribution to what's going on the page. I want them to be happy. And, you know, Mateus's Turtles are very different than Dan Duncan's. And there's a little bit of a give and take. His original designs were even farther from what we have. But we're kind of like, these need to be sort of recognizably the same Turtles to a degree. But as much freedom as we can give them as possible is great. You know, for whatever reason, Ross Campbell really wanted to give April a haircut. And so we said, okay, great. You know, we don't really have any plans to do that, but Tom can write a couple panels, you know, explaining that, and we can do that. And then, you know, that kind of creates problems because it created a continuity issue with the X-Files crossover issue. And, you know, to... it's taken Mateus an issue to sort of get used to April's shorter hair, and it, you know, it creates problems here or there, but ultimately I think it's worth it if it makes the artist happy. And you know, it's pretty much almost always the artist, and Nickelodeon by and large has been supportive of that direction of giving artists the freedom to do that. And that's something, you know, there's other licensors I work with that are very rigid in terms of their character models. I think it helps that our turtle started before the cartoon and started before the movie or anything else. So we've had a little bit of flexibility in that degree, but they've still been very supportive in that way.
That's pretty cool. I'm like, cause I've liked how it's just like subtly kind of gone. Like it just, you know, it seems very organic and natural, and part of that turtles hanging out feeling that, you know, like it's similar to like, you know, like a regular person just being like, what t-shirt am I going to wear today? You know, it's like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to slap this on, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah. And then also a bigger question. Are there any prospects at this point for a second ongoing TMNT series?
You know, I think for the foreseeable future, we're going to have a second slot that takes place in our ongoing universe, you know, whether it's micro series or mini series, you know, a second title that takes place in that continuity. If we're going to see some, you know, if we're going to see kind of what they do with Transformers, where there's two titles running at the same time, I mean, there's not going to be what I would call two ongoing titles per se. I'd love to kind of make my life simpler and make the secondary title, just make that Tales of TMNT. But it's just, once we do that, it's hard to go back from that. If you know what I mean? I mean, you know, obviously Mirage had a couple volumes of Tales and we could do something like that, but I don't like rebooting things if at all possible, if sales support it. So, you know, and we've had a lot of fun miniseries that we've wanted to do, that I don't think would quite, you know, we could do Tales of TMNT and the arc of that is Turtles in Time. That could work, sure, but you know, I think it works a little bit better in the current marketplace where you can start with a new number one and kind of juice it up a little bit. And also, since they are telling such different stories, be able to give them a little bit more of a spotlight. So that's kind of why we've had the approach that we've had of various mini series month to month and micro series. But because I you know, I think the title really benefits from being able to flesh out the world in that way, to a degree. And it could be that we do see, that's something I think about a lot is just making that second title, Tales of TMNT. Cause it presents some problems, but also solves a lot of problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do that in the not too distant future, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't do that as well. So to be determined.
Well, then, speaking of like minis and micros and things like that, also, people keep asking, and we want to know, is there any plans that have come up for IDW to tap, Steve Murphy and Chris Allen to maybe do, the Forever War one way or another?
Yeah, I would love to see that. I actually haven't, you know, I've just been, the 30th anniversary has been such a bear just because there's so many moving parts to it. I've kind of been just trying to nail that down. But I definitely want to talk to those guys, and I personally as a fan would love to see that. Now, I don't think it would happen for a long time because I think we should get those reprints out for, I think we should kind of complete the reprint run. And we're a couple years from doing that. And I also feel like I feel like we're kind of almost flooding the market as is with our two titles, the animated title, the color classics, the three different reprint lines we've got between classics, Mirage classics, Tales of TMNT, Archie. There's a lot of turtle product out there. And so I wouldn't want
to. That makes sense. I'm even having a hard time buying things sometimes.
Yeah. I just wouldn't want to throw Forever War on top of all that. So I kind of would want to wait for the right for where there's time and space for it to happen. So I think it'd be a far way off. This is just me talking. I would love to see it happen. I have no idea if those guys, you know, just as a fan, it seems like they're kind of hot and cold on it, depending on a given month. And I haven't talked to them directly about it, but I do intend to, and I want to let them know that it sounds fun to me personally. You know, I don't know if Nickelodeon would have any objections to kind of reviving something that's been dead for 15, 20 years. but I would think that they would be okay with it. And I want to see it. I want to see, just as a fan, I want to see that stuff. So I hold out hope.
You and all of us.
Well, it looks like, thank you for all that. It looks like we're kind of running short on time now. We don't want to keep you over.
Do you mind me asking? I'd like to ask you guys just briefly, okay. Just because I don't get that much opportunity to, at conventions and Ninja Notes, but that's always kind of one-sided for whatever. I wish more people would write negative stuff to Ninja Notes, and some do. But I want to ask you.
I've thought about it.
Do it.
Of course you have.
But I want to ask. What for you guys? If you could just quickly say, like, what's something that works for you guys that you're excited about? What's something that doesn't work for you guys? And I know that each their own, and there's no one answer, but it's a good, I'd like that feedback if you got it.
More Rochambeau.
Yeah. Don't down with that.
Really, I'm not really a harsh critic. So, there's not a whole lot that I'm all like, man, I wish they didn't do that. Or anything like that. One thing that I had problems with, which doesn't seem to be happening as much lately, is just the timing of the issues coming out. I'm waiting like an entire month, and then like both the micro issue or whatever and the regular run happen on the same day. And lately it seems like it's been spread out a little more, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, I always try and make it spread out, but it's amazing how often you need that extra week.
Production things happen, but yeah. That's the thing I like and I dislike at the same time.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. I feel the exact same way.
Mine aren't any big surprise. What works for me are the designs. I love the art. Like as Josh mentioned, I freaking love the Shredder you guys have. It's probably the best design Shredder I've ever seen. It's very. It's simple and yet it's menacing without being like Super Shredder or some robotic monster.
Totally, it's just a dude with just a little bit of ouchie on him.
Yeah. What doesn't work? No surprise there. I mean, obviously these aren't ninjas that kill, which is a little off-putting. I don't quite get that. I thought eventually they would kind of grow into that, but obviously that may not be realistic for a variety of reasons. Which kind of, I think, hurt stories like City Fall. I think Mark Pellegrini probably put it best when he said, like the whole thing with Leo becoming the Dark Shredder, Dark Leo, and then stepping back from that in the Northampton arc and kind of like dealing with what he did. But it seemed like it was almost written for him to kill someone and then have to deal with the consequences, but without actually him doing anything too bad, it kind of fell flat to me. And I would just like more teeth to the action. I mean, that's really all it comes down to for me. And of course, as you mentioned, the stories that, where things get to breathe a bit. What was the story on with the turtles on the raft and Mirage? Sons of the Silent Age. Yeah, stuff like that. And your Halls of the Lost Legends. And just fair like that, where things can just kind of chill out for a while, where there's no big bad guy or action scenes or stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll just say briefly to you, Andrew, that it's never going to be exactly what you want, and I, if it was my book, if I owned the property, I think we'd definitely see more blood and see more action, and I'll just briefly say that I think this is largely a story of Mata Yoshi, a man whose life of violence had a terrible result. So I think it makes sense in story that he would raise his children not to kill. But that being said, I totally hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. And the reason I'm talking back to you right now is that I think you're never going to be totally satisfied, but you're going to see more than you have seen in the next 12 to 14 months. So we're picking our spots very carefully, and it's required a lot of negotiation with Nickelodeon. But we want certain moments to have an impact. So keep an eye out.
All right, for sure.
Anybody else have an opinion in there before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm going to throw in something real quick. I did write a letter a couple years ago saying, I'd like to see more humor from Splinter, because like one thing I always loved about the Four Kids iteration was where he'd be trying to figure out how to use a cell phone or the remote control, and he'd be like, wait, how's this thing work again? I just want to see something like that happen for starters.
Yeah, and also the current Nicktoon, the Splinter, is also hilarious too. You know, I mean, I laugh at him all the time. And we've had some of that with, you know, when Splinter's been cooking or like he wants to watch his soap operas, but you know, that's just pretty much a symptom of story space, and that, you know, our Splinter's pretty active and you know, out and doing, getting involved in the fights and stuff. But I agree, I love Splinter that comes. I love. One of my, if this is weird, but one of my favorite shows of all time is Golden Girls, and I kind of love old people humor and kind of being out of humor, so I would love to see more of that too.
I mean, personally speaking, for me, I've really enjoyed the books. I kind of like the sense of style, the way the turtles are. I mean, I also see the point, like, why they might not kill, but why they maybe should. I mean, it all comes down to how they were raised in the different versions. I mean, and in the Mirage comics, they were raised to be his vengeance, to kill for him.
Yeah.
A little different. But, yeah, I have liked the books thus far, but I'd like to see some more, maybe just every once in a while, like, see if you can get some of the older artists back, maybe, like, for a single one-shot issue, and maybe some of the old writers like that, like, kind of just, like, a taste of the old.
Like, yeah, totally. And that was a very conscious decision. It would have been very easy at the start to be like, all right, let's get Jim Lawson. Let's have him do it. And it was a very conscious decision to separate our book from what's come in the past, so we could establish a new identity and not kind of be completely in the shadow of what's come before.
Mirage Volume 5.
And also, there's so many great new artists to sample from. But those guys are my heroes, and so you know, I wanted the first couple of years to be kind of independent of those guys, just so we could kind of find our own footing, but. You know, the 30th anniversary has been such a treat. Those guys have all been great to work with. I'd like to, you know, it's got to be the right book. It's got to be the right spot. So don't expect to see lots of them all over the place. But I think there's opportunities in the future to see more from all those guys. So I'm right there with you. They're my heroes, and we're very much standing on their shoulders. So I would love to work with them more.
God, I'd love to see some Farley painted covers or something. That'd be amazing.
Dan Berger.
Yeah.
Definitely see Dan Berger come back.
Yeah, you know, a couple of those, I want to preserve, you know, anonymity and privacy. There's been some Mirage guys that I've reached out to that I just haven't heard back from. It's hard to know what to do in that situation. I'll maybe try and reach out again. But, you know, I think for some, I'm not naming names. Some of the timing just hasn't been right, but some maybe I'm just writing to a defunct email account. I don't think I am, but it seems like some people are that kind of time in their life is done. But there's others, you know, there's others that are raring to go, and it'd be great to see more from.
Agreed. I have a quick opinion on the IDW stuff. I want to say that as a longtime fan. I know you said that was a boring way to start something. I really, really, really love the reincarnation stuff. And I thought that was an amazingly bold decision to take. And it's really, like, I went into the book kind of cautiously optimistic, and that just kind of sold me. Like, that's the reason I keep buying. And, you know, before, I buy a lot of Turtle stuff, and a lot of it is nostalgia, and a lot of it is this, but I buy the book because I cannot wait to see how all of this pans out, and I love what you guys are doing. The only argument I have, or the only, I guess, con I have, is that I would love to see more slice of life stuff, which I know is harder to get to because of the page formatting and because of the way the things are paced. So I'm cherishing the family sidebar stuff that we get a lot, but that would be the only criticism I have is that I want more. Damn it!
Cool. Yeah. Well, we're definitely working towards that. And you know, going back to the old question about what my favorite sort of storyline or issue, you know, now that I think of it, now that you say that, probably would be number 5, just because you get Mateus and you get Dan and you get a done in one story that changes, that flips the entire script. And, you know, so that, going back to that, that'd probably be my answer for my favorite issue.
Yeah. I do agree with Karen. I think the reincarnation thing, I know it's a point of controversy among a lot of fans, but I think it's actually one of the things that I think is done best in the story. I think, as a big fan of Highlander, you know, this opens up the opportunity to like have all these big sweeping flashbacks to feudal Japan. It's just really cool.
It's a great idea, and it was brilliantly executed. So
you guys are in for a treat with Turtles in Time. There's a lot of, I mean, obviously we're doing a feudal Japan issue, and a lot of that comes to the fore. But the entire series is a lot of fun, and you're getting a little bit more, you know, two of the issues are kind of heavy and serious, and two of the issues are more lighthearted and fun adventures. So you're going to get, I wouldn't call them slice of life because they're in different time periods, but it's kind of, it's not like the heavy, deep plot that most of the ongoing is. So I think you guys will get a kick out of that miniseries.
And suddenly, without requiring you to put an answer out in any way whatsoever, I think to myself and ask out loud, will the turtles meet themselves?
Yeah, I will say yes.
Oh, wow.
I didn't think you mean meet themselves as humans?
We didn't need to prompt that out of you at all.
or is it some kind of Zen thing? It's like, they have found themselves.
they're in feudal Japan. Wait, what exactly happens and how exactly happens, well, is to be seen. But, you know, if they're in feudal Japan, you go from there.
Yeah, I just had a good question. Are we ever gonna learn what their human names were before they were killed?
Yeah, we've thought about that a lot, and it's the one question that we don't have answers for. Each time we think about it, we're just like, man, we have no clue what they should be. So as long as we can keep it unknown, we will. You won't find the answer to that in Turtles in Time. You may never find it out just because
we don't need to know that.
Yeah.
Like Calvin's parents.
It can be
you
very
just don't need to know.
It's like, yes, it's Yakahori Takahashi. We don't need to know that.
Exactly.
They're Japanese names that sound close to their names, or they're like the romanized Japanese versions of their names, coincidentally.
Yeah.
just the names of various Japanese fighting game characters, you know.
Totally.
Ken, Ryu.
Yoshimitsu.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for coming on. Thanks for staying over a little bit, and thanks for asking us a question. Nobody's ever really done that, as far as I know. So that's pretty cool. You kind of flipped the script on us and made it really fun. This is a Shell-Shocked mini moment. My name's Josh, and I got everyone here. You know who everyone is, and we're going to talk about that turtle trailer that just happened. Go.
Well, Colton, I want to hear Colton's responses as he's watching the thing. So,
oh, yeah.
The live show.
All right.
No holds barred.
Okay, this looks like Bad Boys 3. Is my bio showing?
Tell us what's happening. A long time ago. That's the wrong trailer.
Ew. Okay, we got guns and people thrown into walls. And, oh, April's got the coat. That's definitely the best thing ever. Who, isn't that? This no, year.
No,
it's not. Heroes are mutated.
Just listen.
Your father and I were trying to create Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We were high. I'm sorry.
I don't see why that's a problem. Anyway.
Well, these designs are certainly something.
Yeah, friggin' noses. Isn't that weird?
Of all the things.
What the shell?
Just wait. Just let him say it. Let him say it.
Wait for it.
Don't be afraid. I'm not a robber.
It's just a mask. Seriously. See?
I like that joke.
It is a good joke.
I mean, I really, really, really like that joke more than I think I was expecting to.
Yeah. My girlfriend liked the joke when I explained it to her because she refuses to watch the trailer. But then I showed her that last little portion and she was just kind of like, fucking nose. you know what's amazing? Okay, I've been staring at this and wanting to say it all night. Now I have a reason to. There's this Mad magazine from December 1989 and it's the Ninja Turtle
issue. I have that!
Yes, and if you look at the cover... Is Alan Newman as painted as a turtle? That's what they look like.
Yeah,
that's what
only Michelangelo. Okay, I'm gonna say it. Leo showing up, that's badass. Leo's design is badass.
Leo
looks like Alfred E. Newman.
Yeah.
He always looks like Alfred E. Newman.
if they all look like Leonardo, I think I'd have a lot less of a problem with it. But, and, yeah. and the nostrils, like, I'm the kind of guy that doesn't have a problem with nostrils at all. I mean, I think they should have been there to begin with in, like, the comics. I mean, why wouldn't they have nostrils, right?
Well, I think, well, I when I mean nose, I mean, like, that shape of, like, that thing that looks like it's been smashed up against the glass, like he's, you know, Hubert Farnsworth's clone or something. You know, that's what I mean. The nostrils are a different story.
Well, see, here's the thing.
Okay, go ahead. You go first. Then I'm gonna go.
I think snout. Snout is the word.
There we apologize. Go. I'm gonna apologize. I'm gonna apologize for apologizing.
Snout.
Damn it! It's Karen's turn. Shut up. Sorry.
Well, see, the thing that kind of gets me is I watch a show called Shameless, and the guy who plays Michelangelo in this movie plays a closeted Chicago townie boy in that show, and all I can hear whenever he speaks is that. And on Shameless, he says the filthiest things. So first of all, he's got that kind of both working for him and working against him. But it's his face. I mean, that's what that kid kind of looks like. So it's just like extra weird for me. And it does look better in motion. I mean, Mikey has a beauty that moves. But it's still weird. I mean, they are hideous freaks of nature. There's no getting around the hideous freaks of natureness.
I've seen them compared to Shrek, to the Lizard and the Amazing Spider-Man, to the Goombas and Mario Bros. It's like it's basically just all those different green guys mashed together in this weird turtle form.
Yeah.
What blows me away is that are people really expecting anything else? Because you know that the Hollywood system is built on lowest common denominator tentpoles. That's how it works. So it's kind of not surprising. It's going to be Transformers with turtles. Deal with it and, you know, and just enjoy it for what it is. Like, and then, and not to mention, my last little diatribe is that if, you know, if they're going to, why do you want to see the same story you already know? Let them change stuff up. Let them make Shredder. Like, for not to mention that every single iteration of the Turtles has some variation that is like, oh, now they're reincarnated. Now they're this. I mean, the back of the toy cards, the way I first saw the whole thing is Shredder pouring purple ooze down a sewer intentionally. You know, like, that's not even different from that.
You know,
so,
While I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just saying from personal experience, from what I've heard of other people, we've seen a lot of movies where Hollywood has tried their own thing and it has gone horrific.
But if you're going to say that, for me, I know all of it. Well, actually, I can't say all of us, but I mean, in 1989, when Batman came out, it was like the end of the world because Batman does not dress in black. That is the stupidest thing that could have ever happened to Batman. It was like the end of the world when the trailer came out. And then it's like, when I grew up with Batman, that was canon. You know, Batman was in a black suit. That's how it is. So,
rude,
you know what I mean? Like, this movie isn't made for us. This movie is made for a whole generation of new kids who maybe think that turtles shouldn't be 3 feet tall. They're more interested in a 25-foot, you know, robot rather than
the thing that gets me about that, though, is the people who are the loudest about hating that are the people who are propping up the industry to glorify that. And Andrew, I am looking squarely at you when I say that. You will be, I love the Expendables, I want my bad guys to be these roided out knuckle dragging. I don't got time to bleed. Well, no, but I mean, that's the kind of action movies that, you know.
What do you mean?
That's what happens. This is the kind of movie that has been selected for, evolutionarily speaking.
Well, when they're going up against Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, sure. Well, that's a little different. Well, I think it's the important thing to remember. I think is this is the first movie that's like not going under the discretion and scrutiny of, you know, either Peter Laird and or Kevin Eastman. This is like the first movie that's like strictly born of a studio and, you know, with playmates with like no filter whatsoever. So it's a bit soulless in that regard, at least from, you know, a design and veto standpoint. I mean, I don't think if Peter Laird was still around in a capacity to veto stuff, like he would allow like the costumes and stuff that they have, the outfits. But as far as the look itself, like I dig the designs. Like I dig like the the scaly skin, the little attention to the textures, all that stuff, the faces, the nostrils, cool, the pupils.
You're
colored,
a jerk.
Fine,
you're a jerk, Andrew.
No, yeah, no joke. Well, no, but see, I don't understand why people are upset about the fact that they're wearing clothing. I mean, they're either polythermic or cold-blooded creatures that live underneath the city of New York, which has winter. Like, really? Of course. And for some reason, it's better for them to walk around like leather daddies on like club night, you know, with like knee pads and elbow pads and like.
Yeah, and Andrew, did you just say you had a problem with the clothing or not? Because it's for the exact same, it's the exact same reason, though. It's the exact same reason they did the exact same thing in the image books. It's the same differentiating reason that they've been making changes the entire way. Such a big image fan?
Does that mean that one of the turtles is going to be a cyborg?
Or the accessorizing.
No, he's wearing a puka shell necklace, dude. Just like Sipes does.
Yeah. Well, this took it a step further. With even adding accessories and stuff, like Michelangelo has like jingly jangly chains and stuff, and they're supposed to be ninjas, they're supposed to be silent.
The thing that I've noticed,
he's
got to sneak up behind some guys.
We see him in the second movie. They can
jingle, jingle,
they can remove bells. Isn't that one of the trials that Raph has to go through for Kino? Is that he has to take all these bells off the thing without making a noise?
You know, look
that's
at
a
these
first
six
movie storyboard scene. You know that it's the first
it's
movie
in his
scene.
Pocket.
You know, look
is
at
it
these,
really?
Look at these like 7 foot tall roided out turtles. I don't think they even need to be ninjas at this point. They can just be brawlers.
Well, he's not supposed to remove
his
own
bells.
Yeah,
and I am totally okay with Raph knocking that jeep over because that's effing awesome.
The thing that I've noticed about this movie is that people like in terms of reaction have fallen into basically two camps. You have the people who cared about it long before this point and have heard every little detail along the way, and they see this trailer and they remember everything so far and they associate it with this trailer. And they're just kind of like, F this. And then you have pretty much everyone else who has maybe heard something about it, maybe heard about the alien thing just before postponing the movie and then adding Teenage Mutant back onto it, if anything at all. And they saw the trailer the other day and they're just kind of like, this is going to be effing awesome. And so they come up to me at work or in class or at the gym or whatever. And they're all like, dude, Josh, we've got to go watch this together. This is super amazing. And I'm kind of like at this point where I'm just trying to be like, where I've got like the little fanboy rage thing going on, but I'm trying to shut it up so that when I go see this movie with all of these friends of mine, I'm not going to be that asshole who's like, you know, punching air the whole time because, you know, of stupid little changes or whatever. Like, I'm not saying like it's going to become, you know, anything that I'm going to watch over and over and over and over again. Yeah. But I want to try and let myself have fun with it, even if it requires a pitcher of beer beforehand.
You don't want to have to turn it to the Hulk during the movie, would you?
Well, I'm going to say what's it. I literally have to go. I'm going to say what Eric Larson said best when we did a thing with him. I think I may have even said this before on here, is that, you know, when they were approaching Image, they were like, you know, fan people. I'm being politically correct, Karen.
You can say fanboys. Fanboy is gender neutral. I totally identify as a fanboy.
There you go. Fanboys are a funny crowd because it's like you don't change something in this issue or this incarnation and you're just treading water. What's wrong with you? This is boring. I don't want to buy this book anymore. If you change one little thing, it's like you kick my freaking dog. My guy's socks are yellow, not red. You know, it's the stupidest little freaking detail that you changed and it doesn't matter how you do it. They've got to walk an insanely fine line. And I realize that it's stupid, and that's why I'm, like, fighting with myself about it. Exactly, because do you really want to... If you want to watch the 1990 Turtle movie, go watch the 1990 Turtle movie.
I want to watch a better movie.
I don't want to watch that.
And hit it
right
on.
Too much of a risk.
What I want to watch.
Too much of a risk.
It's not adaptation
too risky
of
to do that.
Source material.
You're not going to make
it. Not just slavishly.
It would sell.
You know, with a director with a vision.
No.
Who can put his own spin on it.
What you end up doing is you've got to run the gamut. Look at a lot of the adaptations. I'm thinking of three in particular. I'm thinking of the first Harry Potter movie. I'm thinking of Constantine. And I'm thinking of The Last Airbender. They all change things subtly. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
And sometimes it's The Last Airbender.
Well, no. And he tried to change things because he went out of his way. Shyamalan went out of his way to make the Fire Nation Indian, and he couldn't have the Indians be the bad guys. So, you know, he tried something and it didn't work. And instead of trying something and being so, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do this. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least I'm going to tell a good story.
But
which is what you get from Constantine. So my go ahead.
But the point I'm trying to make is, couldn't you say that exact same thing about what Andrew's saying, a faithful adaptation that meets all the stuff, and try it at least once?
No.
Yes. Yes.
Of course
exactly.
It is. They did. They did it in the 90 movie. That's more faithful than you're going to get. Because you know what you're going to get.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the one thing they haven't tried.
What you're going to get is Watchmen. Which was
slavishly faithful
and was nothing but pretty and has no redeeming value whatsoever. When your trailer of your movie is more exciting than your actual movie, and
relatively,
when the opening credits of your sequel movie are better paced than the rest of your movie, you created a soulless movie.
A decent creative team could adapt the material successfully.
Okay, but here's the thing.
Do not agree, ma'am. I do not agree.
No, but then again, I'm just going to say this before I literally am going to leave now. I think that's probably, between that and some kind of extreme examples of slavish adaptations,
that's not quite
just
agreeing with
the first movie not being a direct adaptation. Well, the proof is, you know, if you talk to Steve.
Come back to us, don't go into the light, Carol.
That's what I thought, Isaac.
Cool. Bobby, are we still recording, or can I say something off the record? Are we off record?
Yeah.
He's going to say something important.
Your phone doesn't have SpongeBob on it, does it? It's not like Nickelodeon issue, is it?
Before I die, I have to tell you. Train goes by.
you have no idea how often that actually happens. It always happens to me when I'm talking to somebody else. And there's always that. The most important thing is.
Does that remind you of somebody, Colton?
Did you just say you got laid?
No, that would have made my whole weekend a little bit. Well, I mean, I did, but there wasn't anyone else there. I don't really know if that counts.
Okay. It's just not the same if someone isn't sitting there in front of a fake bush.
Oh, that wasn't fake.
Yeah, I was going to say, the bush is not fake.
I meant a physical, like, fake plant, not that bush. I'm just imagining a giant couch sitting in front of Tom Waltz's desk, and then just Curnow sitting there like dark side, just staring at him.
I don't think it works quite like that.
He'll send a message to Ciro like, why didn't you tell me?
That bitch was asking me questions!
Because I can relate to this. I love that one scene where he's working as a bagger in a grocery store, and his boss pisses him off, so like, he like puts the bag over the guy's head, punches him.
You can relate to that.
Yeah, I can relate to this. I wanted to do that. Like every one of my fucking managers, a giant.
Or when he kills that kid, that was awesome.
Yeah,
totally relate to that killing the kid bit.
Yeah. Takes him back to my toddler years.
Jesus Christ. This is what it's like to be American, I guess. I'll go near the end.
Are you a top or a bottom?
Say switch. The answer to that question is always switch.